Hi, I'm Naomi. I'm 35, newly married, and all I keep hearing is, when are you going to get pregnant? Or you'll be next? Or there's not much time left, you know? Yeah, I do know. Thanks. But what I don't know is if I actually want a baby. So here's a podcast on the Secret Recordings Network in which I'll talk to new mums, non-mums, baby wanters, baby rejectors to figure out whether I want to baby or not to baby. And in this episode, I will speak to Faye, who was given next to no chance of ever becoming a mum.
There's a chocolate advert that I always used to see, and it was a little girl buying her mum a bar of dairy milk for Mother's Day, and I would just sob every time I saw it, because this new reality of what you thought your life was going to be like is potentially going to be different.
And I'll be joined on this journey by my sister and best friend, Camilla.
And I fear I may have ruined the journey already by asking you to do something last week that may have tipped you well into the no camp of having a baby.
Now, I know what the thing is. So explain what the original ask was.
Okay, well, first of all, you messaged me to say, what are you up to on Thursday?
Yeah, because I was lonely.
And I immediately thought, ooh, this could work. So I do a class called Move It Mama, where we all meet in a park and do exercise with the babies in their pushchairs. And most weeks, Chester is the noisiest baby because it's his nap time and he refuses to nap in his pushchair and he just screams, and it's really, I don't get to do the class. Well, I get to do half of it.
Well, this thing is like, it's basically like a boot camp fitness thing. But I thought that it was where you like use the buggy and you use the baby as part of it. But actually you don't really. The babies just sit in their buggies at the side and then you just do your fitness thing.
Yeah, we do some stuff with them. Like if we're doing like walking lunges and stuff like that, or power walking, then we can take the buggies with us. Okay. But a lot of the time they are just at the side, and Chester's not very happy with this.
And so the sales pitch to me was, can you come and maybe you can like walk Chester around in his buggy, because then it will send him to sleep and then you'll be there when he wakes up. He is the only baby who cries.
He is usually.
Well, was he the only baby who cried at the boot camp?
Oh no, he was not. Literally, last week, it was like a choir of screaming babies.
It was domino effect, like baby crying relay. The only baby that didn't cry, may I add, was Chester. He did not a peep out of him. What was the little boy who I was holding
Austin.
Called? Austin, who was very cute, but got a lot of snot and slobber on my coat. So we had Austin under the left arm. And then I was literally having to go round buggy by buggy to the crying baby. So one baby would be crying, I'd go over and and give it a little, oh, go, it's okay. Pushing the buggy, rocking them back. Then they'd smile. And then another baby would go. So then I'd leave that baby and go to the next baby who was crying, swapping Austin from arm to arm throughout, because pretty heavy carrying babies. And all the mums at the end of the boot camp were like, oh my God, please, can you come back next week?
You were actually really good at it as well.
Well, here's the thing. So you were worried that this was potentially going to tip me into not baby camp, because that was a lot of screaming babies all in one go. But I felt like I did it all right at it. So I was like, oh, maybe I could do this.
And
I mean,
looked,
I don't want
nine. You looked calm. You looked calm, which I was really surprised about. I was like, she's either like treading water on the inside or actually she's all right.
I was proper brave facing it, because I didn't want my mum to think I was incapable. Like one of them has given me her child to hold, so I need to look like I can deal with this. So inside I was a bit like, I don't really know if I can deal with this. But I did deal with it, and it didn't make me feel any differently. It didn't make me feel more for it, but it definitely didn't make me feel less for it.
That's really good.
Yeah, so.
Sometimes it makes me feel less for it, and I have one.
So before we talk about your current fertility vibe, you had always wanted to be a mum. Always thought you wanted to have kids, but then in your early 30s, there was basically a spanner in the works.
Yes, that's right. So always wanted children, always presumed I could have them. Everything in terms of my periods and that area was always completely normal, regular, heavy, which actually made me think, oh, I must be really fertile, which is also how my mum and my grandma had been, extremely fertile, both got caught first time they ever tried. So I just presumed that would follow for me.
And then obviously that was not the case. So what happened?
I was in a great relationship. I was in the process of relocating. I had my dream job. and I was having some autoimmune type issues. Long story short, they led to some tests that showed I had premature ovarian failure at the age of 33, which is basically an autoimmune issue which attacks your ovaries, your body attacks your ovaries, and means that they don't function correctly. So your egg count is depleted, your egg quality is depleted, meaning that it's very unlikely, with the statistics and the results that I had when I was given the news, that we would ever conceive naturally.
So how did you find that out then?
I was in a clinic. I'd had some blood test results which didn't sound good, but they'd said until they'd scanned my ovaries and looked at something called my antral follicle count, which is essentially how many follicles containing eggs can be seen on your ovaries, until they'd seen that for themselves, they didn't know how bad the situation was. But the situation was probably as bad as it could have been for someone of my age, in that they'd expect to see 10, 15, maybe 20 follicles, and they just saw just one.
And what did they say to you? Because didn't they say to you that you were like, they thought you were like perimenopausal?
Perimenopausal, premature ovarian failure. They said that it was very unusual for someone of my age to have ovaries, which were essentially the age of someone who was 45 to 50. They were even sceptical about IVF working. And there was lots of discussions that day and in the weeks and months that followed about different treatment options. But essentially, I was told it was going to be very difficult for me to have children and also very expensive.
When you found that out, obviously that was not in your plan. How did you feel?
Like, being completely honest, I don't really remember a lot about the weeks and the 2 months that followed that diagnosis. I became obsessive about it, and I read about 7 books in a month. I saw 3 different doctors in 3 different fertility clinics, private fertility clinics, in the 2 weeks that followed, just to triple check that that was true. It was true. Everybody had given me the same news, that my situation wasn't great. I didn't have a lot of time, in terms of, it would be unlikely for me to conceive if I was still trying in like 5-6 years' time. So time was of the essence. My situation wasn't good, and I had to act as quickly as I could.
Did they give you like you've got a 10% chance, or a 50% chance, or an 80% chance of, like, if you did IVF, did they give you an idea or not?
There was different statistics thrown around. There was, well, they told me a 2% chance of us conceiving naturally, which we didn't. We did actually try for 9. We did have 9 attempts at trying to conceive naturally. Nothing happened. Actually, we had 2 very early miscarriages, which is kind of testament to the fact that my eggs were, they needed some help, and I wasn't ovulating at the right time. My body, my hormonal situation and my body wasn't kind of able to support a pregnancy on its own anymore. And that's kind of what that taught me.
So finding out that you can't do it on your own, what was that like? Because I feel like the assumption for most people is that you just do.
I mean, it is. And it's just, you're just thrown into this whole other world of like fear and overwhelm and just sadness, really, because everywhere you look, and you don't realise it when you're not trying, but you know, you look on an advert, a Pampers advert, or it could be like, there's a chocolate advert that I always used to see, I think it was Dairy Milk, and it was a little girl buying her mum a bar of Dairy Milk for Mother's Day, and I would just sob every time I saw it, because this new reality of what you thought your life was going to be like, potentially, you know, for people who are given a negative fertility diagnosis, potentially, until you then get pregnant, your life is potentially going to be different to how you'd always imagined it. And that's quite hard. And I always say, whenever we talk about it to anyone, I think there are so many people going through terrible, terrible things and worse things than, you know, infertility. But that was the worst thing to have happened to me at that point in my life.
And how did it affect your relationship at that time?
Again, like, initially it was just kind of, we just threw ourselves into the research, and Ben, who is my partner, was incredibly supportive from the get-go. We had to change our lifestyle. We were eating special fertility salads and things that were recommended. I mean, the list is endless.
Who even knew that was a thing?
I know. We were on supplements. We had to cut down our alcohol intake, and my lifestyle completely changed. And our relationship changed, but I think now I look back on the journey, it was actually for the better. Like, I feel like we learn a lot about each other in a really short space of time, and you have to dig deep in those situations, and you either get through it or you don't. And I feel like we came out of it stronger, and I always felt like we were a real team. And Ben did everything. He got all my medication ready. He was there for pretty much every injection. He was obsessive about the temperature of the injections because they have to be kept cool. And he really, you know, he fed me smoothies every day. He made sure everything in the house was decaffeinated, like everything, that all the rules that we've been told to abide by, he just put the wheels in motion and did it. So that was one less thing for me to have to worry about. And yeah, I mean, we laughed, we cried, we screamed, we punched stuff, not each other, obviously, but we, you know, there was, you know, we went on holidays to try and distract ourselves, and we had the odd wild night just to try and be normal, because that's the thing, is everything becomes everything. Anyone who's gone through this will probably say the same, that it kind of becomes the focal point of your life. And that's actually quite tricky when you're in a newish relationship, when you're supposed to be like having loads of fun and, you know, we're engaged, and we just kind of threw everything up in the air. But we've come out the other side, and I think we're stronger for it, definitely.
Okay, Camilla, unofficial expert of the To Baby or Not To Baby podcast, please can you explain what one would find in a fertility salad?
Absolutely, I make them on the regs. Okay, so this is just a particular example that I've found. So it includes broccoli, which is a hormonal cleanser and gets rid of excess estrogen. Ooh. Chard, which is good for neural tube development and is rich in iron. Spinach, also rich in iron and zinc. Lentils, which is your daily folate requirement. I think you said, yeah, I think it's to do with folic acid, maybe.
I'm guessing.
Probably. Walnuts increase cervical mucus.
Oh,
what a word.
Sexy.
Nearly the same as moist. and blood flow to reproductive organs.
So eat some nuts for your nuts.
Pumpkin, again, zinc, and it's good for testosterone and hormone balancing. And finally, berries, which are high in antioxidants and support egg and sperm DNA.
Is there anything about salt and vinegar crisps helping you to get pregnant?
Sadly not.
Worcester sauce flavour? Gotta be.
No, but they were my go-tos. Not before I was pregnant, when I was pregnant.
Didn't you ever think about prawn cocktail when you were pregnant as well?
Worcester sauce, prawn cocktail. Yeah, started off salt and vinegar, and then, yeah, I upped the ante.
Mm, tangy.
And some places don't have Worcester sauce, and that was a problem.
And so that then brings us to the current situation, which is...
So we had three rounds of IVF. First was short protocol. I didn't respond to that very well at all. I got two eggs. The average is 15 to 20.
Just out of interest, so for anyone who doesn't know, what is short protocol?
So short protocol is where they just use the stimulation drugs to give your ovaries a real helping hand in producing as many follicles, which contain the eggs, as possible. The eggs then get married up with the sperm, either via IVF or ICSI, so in a dish, or the sperm are injected. And then they become, hopefully, an embryo at 5 days. Now, we didn't actually get to that stage in our first IVF, which was sad, but we only had two eggs, so we knew the odds weren't great. We then did two IUIs, which is where they inseminate, they put the sperm into the womb at the correct time in relation to ovulation. They do stimulate your ovaries, but it's not as intense as the IVF. So we did two of those, it didn't work. And then the second IVF, we were on a different protocol, which was a long protocol. This is when, as well as having the stimulation, you kind of shut your system down for 4 or so weeks before. It's like an early menopause.
Okay.
To kind of make everything sleep ready, so it's well rested, ready for when the stimulation drugs do come in. And then hopefully that gets a better response from that element of the treatment. But sadly, the long protocol was even worse for us. And I didn't respond at all to that cycle. And when we got to the scan, which is always really nerve-wracking, because for lots of people going through IVF, the eggs might not be the issue, so they might have 10 or 20 follicles or whatever it may be. But for me, that was always a scary thing, because I never really saw more than one or two ever on a scan.
Yeah.
And we got to the scan room, and there was nothing. You know, I'd been injecting for 2 months, and we'd been kind of gearing up for this for like 4 months, and then to see nothing, it was just kind of like, it was just, yeah, it was, that was a tough day. But then we have an amazing doctor. We changed clinics in the meantime, purely for logistical reasons. The travel was getting too much. There's a lot involved in terms of scans and procedures. We changed clinics. He was super, super positive and encouraging and confident in my situation. He changed the drugs, recommended that we did another short protocol, but on a much higher level of stimulation. And I was told it was going to be hard and I'd be ill and I didn't really care. I just wanted to see some follicles on that scan and get to the point where I had an embryo to put back into my womb.
Also, because I feel like at that point, like somebody saying to you, oh, you know, this is going to be hard. Actually, everything that you'd already been through up to that point was hard. Like not maybe, you know, as intensely physically hard as what they were about to do to you, but surely the emotional and the physical aspects of everything else, that's hard anyway. So you must be kind of like, just do it.
Yeah, you just kind of become a little bit like a robot and, you know, your life is completely different. I wasn't the same person. Like, socially, I couldn't go out and drink very much and I couldn't, if I was injecting, then I couldn't really leave that, you know, I had to be back home to do my injection. Otherwise, if I wanted to go out or go to a wedding or go to a party, I had to take a cool bag with me.
Oh my God, please tell me the story about the cool bag at the wedding situation.
Oh my God, so it's just funny, but you know, there's things that you can't miss. You can't let it take, it does take over your life, but you can't let it take over everything. And my lovely friend was getting married and we wanted to be there. And it was about an hour and 40 minute drive away. And I remember Ben being in such a panic about the temperature and the cool bag and is it going to stay at the 7 degrees? And it was the hottest day ever recorded in May or something when we were going to this wedding. So we had this like blue cool bag and Ben had done some tests of this. So it's ridiculous. We'd done some tests of this cool bag to check it would remain cool for the 2 hours, 2.5 hours. It did.
So as in just at home, what you would put random things in the bag and be like, check the temperature that they're okay.
With a thermometer. Yeah. So we would do that. We would just check, put the cool bag together and do some test runs. But then on the day of the wedding, obviously we were arriving and I'd called ahead and said, please can I put my drugs in your fridge? And they were like, yeah, that's fine. And I arrived with my outfit looking glamorous and then a blue cool bag. So yeah, but these are these are just the little things that maybe people don't think about, is that, you know, you can't just go out and be out all night, or you can't just go out for dinner because you have to be back to do your injections. There's just lots of little things that you have to do, but you know, it's all worth it and it's temporary and short-lived.
Also, so before I started doing this podcast stuff, in my head, IVF was like, oh, okay, you go to the clinic and they're going to take an egg and they're going to take a sperm and they're just going to put it in there and boom. Like, I had no idea about all this other stuff, even knowing friends who have gone through it, because I feel like they give you maybe little bits of information about it, but not this whole thing, which just sounds insane to me.
It is quite intense, and I think that's part of the reason we chose to be so open about it. We didn't at first, the first few months when we were coming to terms with it all, we didn't really share it. But then after that, we just started telling people, because it was odd that I was turning down invites to things, and it was odd that sometimes Ben couldn't drink or I couldn't drink if we were in the process of having a cycle, or it was odd that I'd have to be home for a certain time, or if I wasn't feeling well because I was on the stimulation drugs, you know, sometimes it made you quite sick. So we just chose to be open about it and share everything, because a lot of people we spoke to just didn't have a clue.
Yeah.
But then once you tell them, it's like, oh my God, I didn't realise. And then suddenly you just start, it starts a new conversation. And I feel like I love how much more it's kind of talked about a lot more now than it was 2 years ago. And I feel like hopefully in the next 5 years, just like with mental health, there'll be this kind of little fertility revolution. It will become normal and everyone will know what it means and what it takes for a couple to go through it. And so it will just become, I don't know, easier for everyone to deal with for that reason, for it being more open.
Yeah, because I feel like as someone on the outside of it, knowing friends that have gone through it, I almost wish that I knew more to be able to support them through it. Because if you don't really know, then they're potentially going through this really hard time and you actually have no idea, and therefore you can't help them. So
yeah, and like I say, like, it's, I don't want to over-dramatise it either, because some people actually have a really good process. It just all depends on your drugs and your issue. And some people get caught first time with IVF, which is amazing, because great that you don't have to go through it all again. But as well, I'd say, I think it's quite hard for people who haven't been through it to understand, and that's not their fault. I think what's really good and what really helped me is I had like what I call my fertility squad, and there were people who popped up since I started sharing our story who were either going through it or had gone through it. And there was children that I'd known or did know and had been around who were IVF babies, and we didn't know. And it was just great to have that support of someone who's been there, done it, lived that roller coaster, gone through all the emotions, and can give you advice from experience. Not that my friends weren't and family weren't brilliant, because they were, but it's just a different, that I would say to anyone, like, try and seek that out if you can, because there's so many tips and, you know, little things that I learned from those people that kind of just helped to make everything easier.
interesting turn of events. Me and Dan have just been out for date night, and then we came back and we had a lovely time. And then I said to him, I can't remember exactly how I worded it. I think I said something along the lines of, oh, I actually feel really excited to potentially have your baby. And his response was, well, not yet though. I'm like, hang about. You're the one who's supposed to want it now. And now you're the one saying, not yet though. What's a girl supposed to do? So I feel like we haven't even said the
oh, sorry,
what's
yeah.
going on now.
Like I do that, I go off on a tangent. So yeah, so number three, we got short protocol. We got to that day when we got to the scan and we got on the bed and it was the most nerve-wracking thing. And there were 6 follicles on one ovary, which for me, we'd never seen that before. The other ovary was asleep. I didn't really care at that point because I had 6 follicles on one
ovary. There's one awake and one going, we're fine.
They've both been asleep before that. So it was amazing. And just to see that, obviously now, another thing to say is that not every follicle contains an egg. So at that point we were like, all right, okay. So let's say we might have 3 or 4 eggs. Great. And then as the days went on, there ended up being 7 follicles. 2 weeks later, when I had my egg collection, there were 6 eggs out of 7 follicles. And from those 6 eggs, 4 fertilized via ICSI, which is when you inject the sperm into the egg. And then is the other kind of terrifying bit for me anyway, because my egg count was always so low, so we didn't have loads to count on. You then have to wait overnight to see if they're fertilized. And then for the next 5 nights, you have to wait to see if the cells in the embryo now divide properly, because you need to get to a blastocyst phase, which is a 5-day blastocyst. Then it has a really good chance. If you've got a good grade embryo, it has about a 40-50 chance of working. So we needed to get to that. And so those, I don't think I slept much that week, but we had 4 fertilized, and by day 5, all 4 were still going, which is an incredible statistic in itself, because that doesn't really happen. You get that success rate.
Yeah.
1 was excellent, 1 was good, and 2 were poor. So we couldn't freeze the poor. You can't freeze the poor ones because they won't survive the thaw. And they obviously recommended that we put in 1 embryo, the great one, the excellent one.
Yeah.
And we were like, well, no, because we're never going to have to put them both back, because it's taken us so long to get to... We've never even been to this
put
stage.
All of the good ones in. So any of the good ones you've got,
so I literally... And obviously, I get why they don't always do that, because obviously, if one splits, then potentially you've got 2 twins anyway. If one splits, you've then got triplets, which is quite common.
Oh,
not
crikey,
common, but
I didn't
it
even
just
think
happened.
About that.
Yeah. So there's lots of different things to think of, and, you know, all the different risks, but we were very firm, and we told them our kind of backstory. And they said, okay, we will put 2 back, because we wanted a family. You know, I wanted ideally to, if I could, to have another one. But knowing what we'd gone through to get to this stage, it wasn't going to be easy, and it was going to be expensive and stressful. Anyway, long story short, we put 2 back, and I am now 26 weeks pregnant with twins.
Woohoo!
And we're having a little girl and a little boy, which is just amazing. I can still cry every time I say it, because I feel like, oh my God, is this actually really happening?
Yeah.
But it is happening, because I'm ginormous.
You're not ginormous, but you are ginormous in a great way.
Yeah,
and it must,
in the best way.
I can't even imagine what it feels like to have gone through all of that stuff that you've gone through, and to think that actually maybe this wouldn't happen.
Oh,
like maybe there would be a day, you would not have that day where you'd be able to look down and be like, whoa, there are some babies in there.
No, I definitely got to a stage after the second one where the doctors and everybody kind of looked at me and said, you know, we're probably going to have to start looking at other options for you in the new year, because this isn't looking good and we don't want to waste your money. So it was a real reality that I wasn't going to have my own children.
Mm.
But I also want to say that I think we're really lucky in the sense, we're obviously really lucky for lots of reasons, but our journey was relatively short. We did cram a lot into a short space of time, but, you know, I've spoken to women through this experience that have been going through this 6-7 years to get to the point where we're at now. So I also think that we're incredibly fortunate to have only had to kind of go through 3 rounds and the other bits than, say, 7 or 8.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, women, men who do that, they're just like warriors to me. To keep going, like, mentally and physically for that length of time, I think it's incredible.
Just read an article about women and the moment that they realised, yes, I want to have a baby. And one of the women said that the thing that made her realise she wanted to have children was when her cat had kittens.
Now, don't get me wrong, I'm hoping for my own epiphany in some sort, one way or the other. But the cat having kittens made you want to have a baby, really?
Was there a point when you were in the process of going through all this stuff, so before you found out that you were pregnant, that you've kind of gone, okay, well, you know, we'll give it X amount of rounds, or we'll get to this stage, or do you think you would have kept going?
I think we would have kept going, but what our situation would have been and how we kept going and what would have to change, because we couldn't just keep doing the same thing and expecting a different result. So we'd kind of already talked about the fact that we definitely would have the go that we had to get the twins, and then another go for sure doing what we were doing now, and then after that we were going to look at different options.
But how amazing that you go, oh, okay, well, we made all these other plans of potential, like, what if it doesn't work? And then you're like, well, they can go out the window, finally, we can just...
Honestly, even then you have the 2-week waits, then we had both of the embryos put back in, which was amazing, because our wonderful doctor, who we love, physically put them back in, which doesn't happen very often.
Oh, okay.
And he's wonderful and a genius. So he was there and he did it, and they put a catheter in, and you can actually see the embryos drop back into my uterus.
Yeah, what did
you... plop and plop. I mean, we don't call them that anymore, but we did for a while until we started to see that they're actual little people on the scans. So yeah, like plop and plop went back in, and you walk out of the clinic and you're like, right, okay. So then you kind of take it easy for a few days, but then there's a 2-week wait then to see if it's worked. So obviously I'd already been on all the forums that ever existed to do with pregnancy symptoms, and so I was just wanting something, anything, sickness, anything, just something, and I got nothing. And it got to like day 11, day 12, and I remember coming home from London and just sobbing on the sofa and saying to Ben, I'm just going to move to New York and I'm going to leave you because this hasn't worked. And I'm really sorry, but that's what I'm going to do. And that was always my thing every month, the New York thing.
Also, I feel like we laugh now, but then actually at the time, was there a part of you that thought, can we get
survive this? Yeah, yeah, of course, because I didn't want to deprive him. And he was always amazing, and he, you know, there was lots of other alternatives, but I also just wanted it to happen for us and wanted us to have that family, and I didn't want to deprive him of that. But he was always very strong, and he was always amazing and reassuring. But
he's like, I'm stealing your passport, going to New York.
The New York thing was just my little like thing. But so no, but even up until the night we did the test, there was no symptoms. I was convinced it hadn't worked. When we did the test, I woke up at 2:30 a.m. It has to be your first wee of the day. I did it half asleep. I couldn't even look at it, and Ben took it off me, and within 10 seconds he was like, we're pregnant. And then I just didn't sleep. I couldn't go back to sleep. Ben did, I think, after about an hour he was fine. And then I just lay awake literally on my back, just staring at the ceiling thinking, oh my God. And then probably did about another 20 pregnancy tests, all different shapes, sizes, brands that week. Couldn't believe
really
it.
Really line them all up one by one. Yeah.
Oh, we still got them. Positive, yeah, we
positive,
kept them.
Positive, positive.
And
you should create some kind of like art installation.
Yeah, frame it. It's a good idea. We might could do that. And then we were pregnant and we couldn't believe it, but then still it just felt like a dream. And you don't have any other appointments until you get to 7 weeks with the IVF process.
Whoa.
And I didn't really have any symptoms then until that week. And we had the scan and I was so sick, and I thought, oh God, I'm just the nerves of, you know, checking if there's a heartbeat or not. And there was a heartbeat. And then she took the screen back, and that was the best moment ever. And we were like, oh my God, it's there.
It's our baby.
It's there. It's this little blob, and it's pulsating and it's real. And then she, after about 20 seconds, shoved the screen in our face again and said, actually, there's two. And it was just the best. I mean, it's just incredible. Like, you just can't, I mean... it's just amazing.
Aww.
And then we just skipped out of there. Ben had to go back to work. I went for a very glamorous Morrison's breakfast and rang literally everyone who was like in the know. I'm just ringing them saying, you're not going to believe it. You're not going to believe it. You're not going to believe it. We're having twins. We're having twins. And it was just like this crazy morning. And then the rest is history, really.
Just watched a Pampers advert on TV and it made me a little bit teary in the eyeballs. Does this mean that I want to have a kid? Or does this mean that Pampers are just very good at marketing?
Throughout the pregnancy, have you felt kind of more, or I suppose you don't know, but like in my head, I feel like you would be so much more nervous and protective because you're like, oh my God, we have to try so hard to get these, so I must do everything to make sure I'm doing everything right.
Yeah, I feel like when the sickness hit 7 weeks, that kind of took me down. And everything I normally would do, like work and run around and be busy, I couldn't do because I was just being sick everywhere.
Yeah.
So that was kind of good in a way, I think, because it made me stand still. And that was around for about 3.5 months. And then we've been really good at making sure, you know, the vitamins, the supplements, all the kind of the do's and the don'ts are kind of adhered to. So I've been quite militant with that. But I'd say no, I'd say like once we got to, we had our 12-week scan, and actually, I'm not going to lie, like these babies are probably the most scanned babies to ever be in Burton on Trent, because we were just so I was so obsessed with having scans, and obviously Ben was kind of with me on it, but I just couldn't believe it. So I wanted to keep checking that they're okay.
And, yeah.
So I think in all, we probably had about twin, because we're having twins as well, that does increase it, but we probably had about 10, 12 scans, which aren't all my fault, but some of them definitely
every
are.
Every other week.
but yeah, it's just been magical. Until we got to 20 weeks, I still was a bit apprehensive because you just don't know. And yeah. Twins are high risk. And so we just, once we got to that point was when we started to go, okay, this is happening. They're there. We can start buying things and we can think of names and all those lovely things yeah. that we do. So we're kind of in that phase still now, like we're kind of halfway there with everything.
Are they kicking?
Yeah, loads. Oh. I love it. So at night, actually this week we started seeing the little limbs are actually like, you can, if you watch my belly, you just see them kind of see it moving. And I know which one's moving when, because I know how they're positioned. Yeah, it's the most incredible thing.
Oh.
The best thing we saw was when we were at our 20-week scan and they both yawned. And I know that sounds like...
I didn't even know a baby could yawn in there.
Can yawn. And so I didn't. And so the sonographer said, oh my God, that, you know, she's yawning and then he's yawning. And I was like, oh, make them do it again. It was literally the best thing I'd seen up until that point. Because I don't know, it made them seem like real and human.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Oh, thank you so much for this, because honestly, it's amazing. And I really hope, like you said, that having you talk about it so openly and so honestly will then hopefully be able to help A, other people to understand it, but other people who are going through it to do the same and then find fellow fertility friends.
Exactly, like that's what kept us going, and we're still in touch with all those people now, and everyone's at different stages of their journey. But I think things like this podcast, like this, or and different things on social media, there's a lot of kind of bloggers and influencers now who focus on fertility. I think with the growth of that, I think hopefully it will just become an easier journey. And little things like, I always say to people now, don't ask someone, oh, when are you going to have a baby? Because there's literally only a couple of reasons why they haven't got one.
Yeah.
Either they don't want one, which is none of anyone else's business anyway, or they can't have one, which is something that somebody doesn't want to relive over and over again every time they go to a party or a wedding, or they're in the process of trying to have one, but they're not yet pregnant, which is also really bloody hard.
How many times did you cry listening to that?
One full cry, one nearly cry.
I think I did one full cry and two nearly cries. The bit with the Dairy Milk advert proper got to me. Do you know why I think it was as well? Because I feel like you were like Faye in how much you were adamant that you wanted children. And I know that if you'd have found out what she'd found out and had to go through all that stuff, it would have been the worst thing possible.
Absolutely.
And so I feel like you just put yourself in her shoes almost, don't you, when she's telling you the story?
Definitely. And it makes you realise how lucky you are. And like she says, people don't realise what goes into IVF. And like you said, you know, you hear people are going through IVF, but you don't realise how much of a full-time job it is, when it fails, what the things that they have to see, like adverts and pregnant people everywhere. And yeah. God, it's so hard, so hard.
But how amazing! And guess what? She's had the baby!
See, this is the bit that I full cried. The full cry was with happiness when she was like, and there was twins!
I know.
Oh, it's
and when she was
loveliest.
When she was talking about being in Morrison's, eating her breakfast,
that's
and just ringing everyone like, you won't believe it!
Yeah, I feel like Faye is my spirit animal.
I love Faye. So, the twins are here. And I love this as well, because her sister did the announcement on Facebook. And I was like, oh, that makes me even think we're more alike, because her sister did the announcement on Facebook. Not
sisters
that you're probably
very important.
Do it, but anyway, so Rachel, who I assume is the sister, very proud to announce Faye and Ben's little miracles, Edie Ray Elizabeth and Joey Benjamin, were born on Tuesday the 17th of September, weighing £5, 13 ounces and £5, 14 ounces. Huge congratulations. We're all truly blessed. Blessed.
We are truly breast.
Do you know why I think I got it? Do you know why I think I said breast?
Because she's breastfeeding.
It's because there's a photo of her in the bed and it looks like she's breastfeeding.
We are truly breast, as are the babies. Oh, it's so lovely. It is so lovely, so though. Lovely.
And I'm just beyond thrilled for
also
her.
The names.
Yeah.
Edie Ray, that was one of my girl names.
I know.
You love. Are, it is, love.
You are spirit. Each of the spirit animal.
Beautiful names.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, it's nice, isn't it?
And this, by the way, is the only opportunity that you will have to have twins that is okay. So, like, if you were struggling and twins came, that would be amazing. You're not just allowed to want twins all the time.
But why? Look how cute they are.
They are beautiful, but, hey, 1 month, Faye will tell you. I bet she'll tell you how hard it is. Hey.
Will she?
She will. Channeling my inner Chris Ramsey here. Hey.
Hey.
So I know you're still unsure at the moment, but how would you feel if the decision was sort of taken away from you, like in Faye's case? So if you were just told that, you know, you couldn't have children.
I'd hate it. And that is the most ridiculous thing about this, is that weirdly, I almost want the decision to be taken away from me, but more in a way that I kind of just want to accidentally get pregnant and then be like, oh, okay, well, I'll just do it now. But if it went the other way, I would hate it, because there's definitely is a part of me, and some days bigger than others, that thinks that I do want to have kids. And so the thought that to then find out you absolutely can't, I actually think I would deal with it worse than I think I would deal with it.
I think I'd be really upset for you as well.
Yeah.
And I think especially now you've been speaking to all these lovely people that have been telling you their stories, it just makes it even harder knowing what they've been through and what you potentially you might have to go through, because you just don't know.
But you know that I'm going to the fertility clinic.
Yes,
to
makes
speak
me nervous.
To the doctor, and they are going to stick a camera in the and they're going to check out what the situation is, and that freaks me out, because from that point, obviously you won't know 100% what the situation is, but effectively I'll know what are my follicles doing.
What are you working
like,
with?
Like, a month ago, that wouldn't have even been a thing that I would think about.
I didn't know the thing about the follicles.
No, because I suppose unless there's a problem, then maybe you wouldn't need to know.
No.
But yeah, they're going in.
They are going in.
So I'm laughing with nerves. Yeah, so later in the series, I will be getting the tests done to see what my fertility situation is. Eek.
Wowzers.
Wowzers.
So, after talking to Faye, where are we at with to baby or not to baby?
See, the emotions that I feel when I listened to Faye and how happy it made her and how sad it made her when she thought that she couldn't, it does make it higher. So I think today I'm 80-20.
Holy poo balls.
I know, it's high.
Yeah. To be fair, I challenge most people to listen to that and not go into the high end of to baby.
Everyone's going out and making sweet love tonight. Follow our journey and tell us about your own on social media at to baby or not. If you rate and review this podcast, not only will it really help us out, but it will guarantee that your baby will always smile in photos. So cute. Join me next time when I try to decide whether to baby or not to baby.
Next time on To Baby or Not To Baby.
My only ambition was really to be a dad, just because of the relationship I've had with my parents and my dad in particular. And to get that opportunity was just sensational.